comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show, and I hope that you brought a seat belt or two with you for this evening, because we've got a great show lined up. Talk radio like nowhere else on earth. It's the show where you matter. And we're here because you have a right to know. A couple of things we're going to be talking about tonight here on this show. I'll give you a little sneak preview. Solar storm is supposed to hit us tonight. And in fact, the report I read just before going on the air says that we already have one satellite has already been disabled. It's already been knocked out. So we're going to be talking about that just a bit with Dr. Brooks Agnew tonight. Also, Congress is preparing to vote now on a bill to censor the Internet. It's already been approved by the Senate, and it goes to Congress now and House of Representatives. If it passes there, it will go to the President, and if past actions, past history is any indicator of the future, he will sign it. And then right here in the land of the free, your internet will be censored. So we'll talk about that with Dr. Brooks Agnew tonight. We're also going to get into the whole dust-up about the intergalactic defense projects being explored by the Pentagon. You know, we've already done a couple of shows on that. We're going to ask Dr. Agnew to wade into that with us a bit and see what his thoughts are on this intergalactic defense thing. Our members area is absolutely packed with all kinds of features and great things that you get to experience once you join our members area. One thing, of course, is you get to watch the show live. And if you miss the show, you can catch it for the next 24 hours. You can watch it live. We capture it and upload it. You get into our archives, and those go back several years. You also get to experience our chat room. You get to experience our forums, our library of free ebooks that you can download, our video galaxy with videos in there that you can watch, and you have your own blog, your own friends page, your own photo gallery, and coming up in our new members area, you'll also have your own video gallery. You can own video album. You can upload videos. If you're not a member, join right now so you can start experiencing the Kevin Smith Show the way it should be experienced. We'll be back with Dr. Brooks Agnew right after this. All right. right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And as I said at the top of the show, my guest this evening is Dr. Brooks Agnew. He is no stranger to the Kevin Smith Show audience, and that's a good thing. Dr. Agnew, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you so much, Kevin. It's good to be home.
I had the privilege, folks, of being Dr. Brooks Agnew's guest on his radio show, X Squared Radio, on Sunday. And I have to say, you know, normally I'm on this side of the mic, and it's a pleasure to be on the other side of the mic once in a while, and especially on such a quality show as the X Squared Radio Show. So I appreciate you for having me on the show.
Oh, it was my pleasure, and it was the pleasure of all the listeners of X Squared Radio, because they all know Kevin Smith was my mentor and helped me get started in the business and helped me become a better radio host.
Well, I appreciate all those kind statements. But I want to get into something that'll be of real interest here to the audience, and that is, I've got three things that I want to throw out at you, and we'll just sort of kick this can around and see which way it goes, see which direction on the street it falls. Now, the first one has nothing to do with the world of paranormal, but it has everything to do with the world of freedom of speech and our ability to broadcast the shows that we broadcast, your show and mine. And that is that Congress is preparing to vote now on a bill sent to them from the Senate, S-968. It's called the Protect IP Act. And this would allow the Department of Justice to force search engines, browsers, and service providers to block you, to block users' access to websites that have been accused of facilitating intellectual property infringement without even giving them a day in court. If this bill passes, internet censorship is here in a big way. What do you think of that?
We could accuse CNN of copyright infringement of ours, and we could take them off the net?
I doubt they would apply this to CNN. I doubt they'll apply it to any of the big media that already is controlled by the government. I'm not saying that CNN is specifically controlled by the government. I'm saying that the government does control big media, and they do it in a number of ways, by threatening not to renew FCC licenses, by putting pressure on news anchors and producers of news shows and so forth. So they already have those people pretty much under their thumbs, and I doubt that they would want to take their appointed mouthpieces off of the air. So I don't think they will apply it to the big boys. They will apply it to alternative media. It says that if you have been accused of intellectual property rights infringement. Now, folks, let me tell you how that can happen. I cannot remember the two musicians involved in this lawsuit. I read it a long time ago, and I can't remember who it was that was involved. But one musician filed a lawsuit against another, saying that this second musician was using some of his music in the second musician's new record. It was determined, after they played this in court, it was determined that there were three notes that match a note progression in the first musician's music. The court said that was enough to be a copyright infringement. Now, you know, look, think of this. Between two notes, there are eight notes in a scale. Actually, there's seven notes in a scale, and then it repeats. So, between any two notes, how many combinations of two notes are there in a scale? Well, there's not very many, are there? So when you put two notes side by side, what's the chance that you're going to come up with two notes that were side by side in someone else's music? 100%. Three notes.
There was nothing in the music that fell under the cloth of artistic license. That is to say, when you're quoting something out of a newspaper, you can say, this person said in this newspaper, and you can grab two or three sentences and put it into your book. That's considered artistic license. Doesn't need copyright.
Yeah, right now it's considered fair use. However, if this bill passes, they can say, well, he's been accused. He took three notes. This guy is accusing him of taking three notes out of his music. So we can shut down his website. And what they do is, not only do they shut it down, the Department of Justice will be able to force the search engines to stop listing it. It won't even be on the list anymore. You simply vanish.
Well, don't you think the Department of Justice is going to be busy taking Standard & Poor's apart?
No.
Lowering the rating of the U.S.?
No. I think that's smoke and mirrors. I don't think they're going to lift a finger. I don't think they are going to touch a hair at Standard & Poor's. I think it's smoke and mirrors.
You might be right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, every year we hear something like this Fair Media Act or this Time Act, where the left, who work so vociferously to usurp our rights and to put forth their propaganda in such a way that anyone who disagrees with them is just un-American, or shall I say, not working in a bipartisan fashion. But it never really gets any traction. Because one of the things that we treat most near and dear in this country is freedom of speech. Where we spend our money, how we burn flags, how we dress, churches we go to. But that being said, we are seeing very recently, like in the last 30 days, we're starting to see some people being arrested for free speech, for instance, Facebook pages advocating a legal gathering in demonstration against government policy. We just saw two guys get sentenced 4 years for creating a Facebook page asking people to join in on a riot. Now, the riot never happened, but nevertheless, they were charged and convicted. And so we are seeing the First Amendment right of free speech begin truncated in the name of national security.
Well, I have a different view. I think what we are seeing is it's not being truncated, it's being shredded. The Constitution is on fire, and it's going up in smoke. And I'm on the list, I know I am. MSNBC, who absolutely kissed Obama's butt to get him elected, MSNBC has now come out with a report that President Obama has a hit list, and this hit list is not a political hit list. It is an assassination list. It has dozens of names on it, including American citizens, some living in the USA, and they have been targeted for assassination. Now, that's MSNBC. All right, and they were livid about it. And, of course, my attitude towards that is, hey, you know, you elected it, love it. What we're seeing is the Constitution is going up in smoke. And this freedom of speech thing is a huge, huge deal. Without freedom of speech, you cannot protest against any other violation of your rights. You have to have freedom of speech, or you can never voice opposition to any other violation of your rights. This is an important thing.
I recently heard of a case where there was a domestic, or at least a neighborhood, altercation, where the police were called, and, of course, neighbors came out of their houses, standing in their own front yard, not on the sidewalk, on their property. And one of the neighbors had a video camera, and they were videotaping it. And the police asked her to put the camera away and go back in her house. And she said, I don't have to put my camera away. I'm filming the street. I'm standing on my own property, and I'm exercising my free right to look at what I want to look at. And he said these key words, I don't feel safe with you behind me with that camera. And that immediately put her in a zone where she was not obeying the orders of a law enforcement officer. They confiscated her camera, and they arrested her and charged her.
Well, that's a clear violation, number one, of our Constitution. It's a clear violation, number two, of international law. The current government seems to absolutely have no qualms about violating either the Constitution or international law. They don't care. There are people who have said a lot of negative things about Alex Jones because they say, you know, he's radical, he's saying things that aren't true. The very things that Alex warned us about years ago are coming true now. And look, I'm not anti-cop. I spent my life being a cop. I am anti-jackboot police state. And that's pretty much where we are. It really is.
Doesn't the Department of Homeland Security and clauses in the Patriot Act allow the country, or at least empower law enforcement, to take preemptive steps to protect the safety of the United States of America, to protect food, to protect our airwaves, to protect our water supplies, and to protect our streets? And I think this whole publicity about these riots in London and potential riots in the United States is, like you say, more smoke and mirrors to make people say, yeah, we'll give up our freedom of assembly, our right to assembly, because we need to stop that kind of activity.
Well, I agree with you. I think that's what's going on, but I would hope the American people are not quite that stupid yet. But I fear many, many are. And, there aren't too many people that are voicing much opposition to this hit list. MSNBC was, I would say, very brave in reporting what they did about that. And, folks, you can find that on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and do a search for MSNBC Obama hit list. You'll find it. It's for real. It is for real. I'm quite aware of the fact that the time left to me to broadcast openly and freely, that window is closing, and it's closing rapidly. And but I have determined, Brooks, that it ain't over till it's over, and when it's over, it's over. But till then, I'm going to act as though there still is a Constitution. I'm going to act as though we still have a republic. But now, you're right. The Homeland Security has given the police the right to do preemptive arrests in protection of national security. And if they took that seriously, all of the police in the United States of America would be in Washington, D.C., rounding up and arresting Congress and the Senate.
Yeah, I believe that.
They are a threat to our national security. They really are. And that's not all of them. There are a few good eggs still in the basket. But that basket is so overwhelmingly rotten, the good eggs are not going to be able to change much. All right. Let's move on while we still can. There's a solar storm that is hitting us tonight. As I speak, it's beginning to hit. And it has been reported that it's already knocked out one satellite. They are saying that we may see cell phones go down, power surges and power outages around the country, around the world. So they're saying this could be a little bit touchy. What do you think about that? What do you know about it?
Well, the solar storm, we really dodged a bullet last week. We had sunspot 1261, 1263. These were not ordinary sunspots. These were high latitude reverse polarity sunspot clusters. And they were just ready to launch an X-class flare. And sure enough, 1261 or 1263 did so, but just a few hours after it was lined up with Earth. We just missed it. Now, it went over the western limb of the sun, and it's coming around the back side. These sunspot clusters were so large, I doubt very seriously that they've dissipated. When they come back around, they get pointed right at us again. People need to realize that in 1859, just as we were discovering how to use electricity to make Morse code messages across the country, there was a terrible solar storm. It was so terrible that the telegraph wires picked up millions of volts of electricity that were transmitted by the sun to Earth in the form of this solar storm. It caught telegraph offices on fire. It burned up it shocked workers. And it shut down telegraph offices for a couple of days. Now, we were not in the electronic age. We were in the electrical age, but now we're firmly in the electronic age. We use smartphones, we use Bluetooth, we use all kinds of electronic devices. Even our cars run on half a dozen computers. If we had a solar storm similar to what happened in 1859, and if you believe me, it's not a very big deal. In fact, just all around the world are ringing the alarm bell right now. We have no backup plan. This is what I mean. We have high tension lines stretched all across our country, and they're tied together in one massive grid.
All right, we have to step away for a break, and folks, we'll be back with Dr. Brooks Agnew right after this.
And you're listening to The Kevin Smith Show, also known as the world's hottest talk show host.
And welcome back to The Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Dr. Brooks Agnew. When we went away for break, we were talking, Dr. Agnew, about this solar storm back in 1859. It also sparked a whole lot of wildfires because there was so much electricity in those wires that a lot of those wires snapped, those telegraph wires snapped, hit the ground, discharged electricity into the dry grass. And so there were a whole bunch of wildfires all across the United States as a result of that solar storm.
Right, and in those days, the wire was made of copper. It was heavy, and they had to support it with poles and a lot of maintenance, and they used a fairly high amperage electricity because they would have losses along the line, and they wanted to transmit a telegraph message from Salt Lake City to New York. It took a little while to make that happen. It had to go through relay offices. But today, we have a very complex balanced grid where we can shift energy from power stations in Texas all the way to grids in New York or even California. All of those high tension lines run somewhere in the neighborhood of 161,000 volts on aluminum wire, because it's lightweight and it can stretch for long distances and it has very calculable loss to it. Well, what this makes is a gigantic antenna all across the United States. So when there's a giant solar storm, instead of a single strand of copper picking it up going from Salt Lake City to New York, you have hundreds of thousands of miles of aluminum wire picking up that voltage from the sun. Now, we're not talking 100,000. We're talking a couple of billion volts. But at the other end of that wire is a transformer that steps that voltage down from 161,000 volts to 13,800 and then to smaller voltages and various amperage settings to your houses and businesses and factories. The interesting thing about a solar storm is when it hits the Earth, the electricity goes both ways, which means if you throw a million volts onto that antenna, you step it up from a million volts 20 times or 30 times and put it on the high tension line, it's now 30 million volts with almost unlimited amperage. In other words, we've just transmitted lightning bolts all across the country via aluminum wire, which is going to explode. And if it doesn't explode, it's going to melt the cores of those big oil-filled transformers. When that happens, we are out of power. And they have no spares for those big transformers. Now, they can build them, but the factories that make the transformers require electricity. And it's not just going to be our transformers. It's going to be the transformers all across the planet where that solar storm hits.
Do you anticipate that something that dire actually will happen tonight?
Yes. Next Tuesday it's going to happen. No, seriously, that's how soon we could see this. We are dodging these X-class and M-class bullets almost on a weekly basis. We're dodging it tonight. Fortunately, it's not an X-class flare. It's just an M-class flare. But X-class flares are coming. We had 9 of them in October of 2004, and it caused havoc with cell phones, pagers, computers, internet service. Of course, in those days, we were working on maybe lesser of a smart grid than we are today. Today, the grid is very, very smart and very sensitive to electronic disturbance.
Well, that kind of sounds like it's a little bit dumb to be on a smart grid.
Well, it does, because there's no backup plan. I mean, seriously, people, we're going to be stretching 2 tomato cans apart with a string in between, and we're going to be rubbing 2 sticks together to make fire.
Well, here at the Kevin Smith Show studio, we won't be rubbing 2 sticks together. But that's because I've lived in these kinds of conditions before, and I know how to make fire. I know how to make it with 2 sticks, but I also know other ways. And I would encourage all of our listeners, if you don't have any idea at all about how to survive with 0 electricity, you really need to go get you a book right now on survival. You need to learn. You're cutting it close if you don't already know. You're cutting it close, but I would suggest you start tonight because the possibility of being without electricity, not for a day or two, but for maybe a year or 2 or 10, that possibility actually exists. Now, we're not saying that for sure that will happen. But what I am saying is for sure it is a possibility, a very real possibility, and you need to know some things. Brooks, have you ever lived where there was no electricity whatsoever?
Yes, I have. And I have also gone, you know, camping for extended periods of time, a couple of weeks. And actually, it's quite peaceful, but it can't get enough done like you can today. But people, we're playing in the middle of the freeway here. The odds of us getting hit are very high, and it's only a matter of time.
You know, the odds of a solar flare getting down on the deck with us, not just the charged particles, the electromagnetic storm, but the odds of a solar flare actually getting on deck with us, they're pretty high right now as well, are they not?
Yes, absolutely. Not only are the geomagnetic storms hazards to electronic circuits, but we get storms full of high-energy protons. And we're not talking about photons of electricity. We're no longer talking about frequency. We're talking about solid protons that can actually collide with tissue and cause tissue damage. When we have these high alerts with proton counts 5, 6, 7 protons per cubic centimeter, you need to wear a long sleeve shirt when you're out there in that sun. You go out in the sun and feel your skin stinging after just a few seconds of exposure to the sun. Be smart. Don't put the mineral oil on and lay out it. Put on some Schedule 80 sunscreen called Blue Jeans. You'll be safe.
All right. Well, we live in interesting times, do we not?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
One of the interesting things that's going on, and, you know, I've talked about it. I talked about it on your show, and I've talked about it on two shows this week, and this will be number three. After this test of the HTV 2B hypersonic aircraft, which I find from start to finish completely suspicious. And I don't doubt they did the test. What they told us about that test I find to be very, very suspicious. But having said that, now let me say this. Immediately after that test, and actually even a little bit before the test, this started appearing. There are articles all over the internet on news sites. Some of the news sites have already taken them down. Some of the news sites where I read these articles now don't have them. And I think the reason is specifically what I'm about to talk about. In these articles, a phrase was used. And this phrase was intergalactic defense projects that the Pentagon is exploring. And I think that's probably why these news reports, these articles were taken down off of these news sites. Someone happened to say, oh, wow, we cannot admit this. But it was already admitted. It's already been admitted in the press that the Pentagon is exploring intergalactic defense projects. Now,
yes, what we were discussing at the time was the HVT-2. This is a high-velocity, high-altitude defense plane that has recently been tested. It was undergoing its second test at 13,000 miles an hour. Believe me, they published that speed. And they said that the reason the project was being explored was exactly what Kevin's talking about. Intergalactic defense system, quote, unquote.
Well, on two nights ago, I did a show, the whole thing, completely dedicated to that, because I asked the question, is it possible that the writer of the article, the original article that had those words, and then a lot of other articles picked that up. Is it possible that was just a bad choice of words, or did this writer tell us something that is actually going on? And I asked, are there other things that we can look to that point to this being very plausible? And I spent 2 hours listing things that are out there in the news all the way back to 2005 that talk about the U.S. military and intergalactic things. One of those is the former defense minister of Canada, Paul Hellyer. And Paul Hellyer said in a speech September the 25th, I think it was, 2005, at the University of Toronto, he said in the speech, number one, he was very concerned about the possibility of intergalactic war because, number two, the U.S. military is building weapons that can be used for that. And number three, President Bush gave the U.S. military the go-ahead to build a forward base on the moon. Now, that's a little fact that a lot of people didn't know. I had heard it. I had forgotten about it. But in 2005, President Bush had already given the U.S. military permission to go ahead and build a forward base on the moon. So one would have to assume that's underway. One would have to assume it may already be completed, and there may already be this forward base. And Paul Hellyer said, because of all of those together, he was concerned that the U.S. military could get us into an intergalactic war without any of the rest of us having any say-so or warning. Now, that points to the plausibility of this statement being accurate. The statement being that the Pentagon is exploring intergalactic defense systems. Now, intergalactic doesn't mean within this galaxy. Intergalactic means doing business somewhere between our galaxy, the Milky Way, and anywhere else out there. Intergalactic would be between the Milky Way and everywhere else. That implies, now correct me if I'm wrong on this, and I mean it, Brooks. You'll have to do it when we come back, but correct me. If we're looking at intergalactic, that means we've already accomplished galactic defense systems. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Dr. Brooks Agnew. And I asked a question before we went to break. I said, if we're talking about intergalactic defense, that would imply that galactic defense is already a done deal. What do you think?
Well, it could be. I think we're struggling with getting satellites outside our own solar system, or so it would appear. I think it was a big shock for everybody to see our space shuttle program end. And frankly, I think all of those space shuttles, the remaining ones, are still in good shape, and they're all flyable. I don't think they're taking them apart or sending them to Smithsonian. But it has become, I guess, painfully apparent to the NASA space theater show that the jig is up. The American people know that it is not necessary to strap Americans to a rocket and light it to send people into space. The American people know that we can fly to space. In fact, we could probably fly to Mars in a matter of 5 or 6 hours. So the idea of a deep space exploration is just the next jump. What I don't understand is why in the world, and I don't mean that in any form of pun, why in the world would we keep that secret from the people of Earth?
Yeah, especially since that's the people that are paying for it.
Yeah, I mean, it was when President Kennedy announced that we were going to send a man to the moon in that decade, that was as big a source of national pride in 1969 when those first footsteps were laid in the dust on that foreign body as any war we've ever fought, and the only people that died did so accidentally.
Well, I don't know. It's a great mystery, this intergalactic defense project or projects that the Pentagon is exploring. It's a great mystery. I think we can say, though, that the big bombshell in that story is what Paul Hellyer said, and that is that President Bush had given the U.S. military permission by 2005 to build a forward base on the moon. That may be the reason that the Let's Go Back to the Moon program at NASA was canceled. Maybe they just don't want to expose that the base is there and where it is and what it looks like. But you know, there are other nations with satellites up there, and more coming. Somebody's going to get a picture of it, and it's going to be, Brooks, this is going to be just like Area 51. Everyone in the world knew that Area 51 was real and it was there. The Russians had pictures of it, but they were still denying it here in the United States that it even existed. The first pictures Americans saw of Area 51, satellite pictures, were from a Russian satellite. They already knew it, and the only people that it was a secret to were the people that were being forced to pay for it. Everybody else knew.
Well, the real thing that we don't know is how extensive is Area 51. Is Area 51 just some big desert airstrip where we launch and land experimental aircraft, or is there really an underground base there with extensive alien technology being reverse engineered? We just don't know.
No, we don't know. But what we do know is it's there, and they finally have admitted that, leading me to believe that it's super high secret stuff is pretty much in the past. It's you know, the fact that they finally admitted it's there, probably that means that the really super high secret stuff has been transferred elsewhere and is not happening out there in that desert like it used to. Now, along the way here, you mentioned Mars, and I want to get into Mars a little bit, and in the next hour, we'll open the telephone lines for our audience, but you mentioned that we can fly to Mars in 5 or 6 hours, and that is information that has been around and information I've talked about. But let's talk about Mars. You know, NASA recently has, within the past couple of weeks, they've released some pictures, and they've said, you know, we think we're looking at water flows here on the surface. And they released the pictures showing what they think are water flows on the surface. Now, we're not talking about rivers, but we are talking about liquid water.
Yeah.
People have been real excited about that. Well, yeah, people have been real excited about it, and there have been a lot of articles written about it. There have been a lot of shows within this genre done about that. But what NASA didn't say, and what almost nobody is saying, is the big news. And that is, NASA's official story about the atmospheric conditions or the environment environmental conditions on Mars, their official story is that the atmosphere is so incredibly thin that it's impossible for there to be liquid water at the surface. So when you have water ice that begins to melt in the summertime, and it goes straight from ice to vapor. There's no liquid water in between because the atmosphere is so thin that liquid water cannot exist. Well, what they're not saying, and people, the silence on this needs to be screaming in your ears. They're saying we see liquid water flows on the surface. What they're not saying is, and that means we've been lying to you about the atmosphere on Mars.
Yes, because the atmosphere could not be 1/100th or 1/1000th as our atmosphere. Because you're exactly right. Water, solid water, ice, would sublimate directly into gaseous form. That's what it does up in North Dakota in the wintertime. The ice doesn't melt, it evaporates.
Well, you know, they told us there was no such thing as liquid water at the surface. And then the Phoenix lander landed up near the North Pole of Mars, and in one series of pictures that it took, it had its camera pointed almost straight down. And one of the legs of the Phoenix lander is in the picture. Now, that leg has a foot pad, and it's sitting on the surface. You can't get any more surface than that. And in that series of pictures, you can see water droplets, condensation, forming and dripping down the leg of the Phoenix lander. Now, I talked about that at the time when it happened. I said, well, there you go. There's water at the surface. Again, almost nobody was talking about it. And now we have NASA saying we think we see water flows on the surface of Mars. Well,
if that's the case, then there's probably breathable pressure at the surface of Mars, at least in the lower altitude.
Well, yeah, you would think. And, you know, I grant you it would be probably very thin, but something akin to being up in the Andes, up high altitude in the Andes Mountains. And there are people that live up there. Okay, so thin, yes. Non-existent? Nah. If there's liquid water, there is dense atmosphere. We will be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Brooks Agnew. For those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here. You have missed a universe of information, and you have my sincere sympathy for whatever it is that kept you away from the first hour, but we're glad you're here now. And we're talking with Dr. Brooks Agnew about a variety of things there's just sort of a confluence of things coming together right now, and we're talking about several of those. But this thing about Mars, Dr. Agnew, you know, because you and I have been talking to each other now, I guess, what, since 2007, 2008?
Right.
Something like that. And so you know that I have said on numerous occasions that conditions on Mars, I'm not saying that they're Earth-like. I'm saying they are a whole lot more Earth-like than what NASA's been telling us. And I've been providing proof, evidence of that. And, you know, I've gotten a lot of email, not tons of it, but I've gotten a number of emails over the years from people who were really upset that I was suggesting this, and that I was saying that there was a thick atmosphere on Mars when I had absolutely no proof of it. Well, I provided evidence for it. I provided as close to proof as you can get. But I've had a number of people telling me this. And I would say, now, what can you say about it? I mean, if there's water on the surface, the atmosphere is thick.
Well, yeah. I mean, we have places on Earth. I mean, I've been to Tibet, and I've been up to almost 20,000 feet, which is, you know, higher than the average person would even consider going. We didn't make it to base camp, which was 23,500 feet. And there were people living there. And we met with many Tibetans who were herding goats at 18,000 feet and were getting ready, because summer was coming on, getting ready to go higher into the mountains. So, you know, this is an area where, believe me, the simplest act of walking 50 yards is almost exhausting unless you're acclimated to it. But I can tell you that Earth can support life in just about any level or void of the planet, whether it's inside the Earth or on top of the Earth. But Mars is a little different story because it does not have a magnetosphere. Now, it is a little bit further away from the Sun than Earth is by about a factor of two. But that doesn't mean that it's not inhospitable. It's significantly more hospitable than the moon is, although the moon has a mild amount of atmosphere on it.
Yes, it does. The moon has atmosphere, and it has been observed to have clouds. Astronomers have seen clouds moving across the moon. That's a fact that a lot of people are not aware of, but that's a fact also that NASA published. Before we did the Apollo missions to the moon, before we got into all of that, NASA commissioned a study of all the anomalous things that astronomers had observed about the moon for as far back as they could go, and they published that report. It's available on the internet. There's over 600 entries in that, and those clouds are in there a couple of times. So you can't have clouds without atmosphere.
Well, that's true, but the moon does have a significant amount of gravity, and it is close enough to Earth. Earth does leak things into space, and space, and especially even other planets, leak things to Earth. It's quite amazing the number of meteorites that have been found that have come from Mars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, quite a number. Well, I'll tell you what I want to do. I want to open up the telephone lines and invite our audience to join us and participate with us in this discussion. Folks, we've talked about really, I guess, four big stories here tonight, and we're going to continue, but I want you to have the opportunity to talk with Dr. Agnew and make a comment or ask a question, and you can do that by calling us at 623-444-5889. Telephone lines are open, and that telephone number will work anywhere in the world, all right? But if you're in the USA, if you're in Canada, please do use that phone number, 623-444-5889. If you are outside of the USA and outside of Canada, we understand that an international long-distance call can be expensive. If you wish to call us, we'd love to talk with you, and that number will work. But for those of you outside the USA and outside of Canada, We have another feature for you because of the expense of international calling. It's called a flash message. You just go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. When you get to my website, scroll down till you see the picture about tonight's show. And right above that picture, you'll see the link that says flash message. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Francois from Montreal.
Hello, Francois. How are you?
Hello, Kevin. Hello, Dr. Agnew.
Hello. How are you?
I'm fine. Maybe yesterday I was a little bit of bad humor because someone pretend to run over me with a car, but I'm okay now.
Well, we're glad you're okay.
As long as Kevin still likes me, I'm okay.
Well, you're okay then. What's on your mind this evening?
I have four questions for Dr. Agnew in case he's familiar with the USAF-like technical language.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Like, is Iridium, like, have a defensive purpose, like an Iridium ground base? You know, like, are they talking about, like, the Iridium constellation satellite for communication? But all you need for that is a satellite cell phone. You know, my second question, I'm sorry, I'm going to lose my mind if I don't ask all the questions first. And is, like, a space personnel synonymous with, like, airspace surveillance personnel? And is, like, spacecraft synonymous with artificial satellite? And I just noticed, like, in a document I have that they call, like, purple project or purple budget instead of black. You know, and that's all.
Okay, I'm not sure I understand that second question. So give us the second question again.
Is space personnel synonymous with, like, airspace surveillance? You know, like those guy on the radars and missile stuff and whatever.
Okay, Dr. Agnew, let's take the second question first.
Is he asking about space personnel?
Yes.
Are they
synonymous with airspace surveillance personnel?
That's a really good question. Most of the surveillance that we've seen go up has been unmanned, sort of like space drones, either high-resolution optics or high-resolution other frequencies like infrared or even X-ray, looking at the voids in the Earth, things like underground bunkers, tunnels, things like that. The manned stuff is a little bit more interactive. That is to say, they have sophisticated instruments with which they can look at the ground. They can be asked by various military installations, hey, look out the window and tell us what you see over here with your set of binoculars. They're only a couple hundred miles up. And they also can be looking for gravitational ripples of high-speed aircraft at high altitude that might have stealth capability, but they still put off gravitational waves. They have very sensitive instruments in space that can pick those things up. So the answer is yes, there is high-tech surveillance going on. It is being manned, and it's also being unmanned.
Okay, and is, like, spacecraft and artificial satellites synonymous to them?
I'm going to say not completely. In one week last month, we had 7 rocket launches in 7 days. But it's all kinds of countries. India, Iran, France, the United States, Japan, they're all sending satellites up for various reasons. The consensus is that all countries are putting up some kind of surveillance or some kind of defense system. Case in point, we launched a super secret satellite, and it had high resolution optics on it. It had a very advanced fuel system on it. And about 2 hours after it was put into orbit, it was knocked out of commission, and its orbit began to immediately decay. NASA had 2 years to consult with the Navy to figure out how to shoot this satellite out of the sky before its orbit decayed such that it would, you know, burn up in our atmosphere and land in the ocean. This spacecraft had such high-tech surveillance equipment on it that the Navy could not allow it to fall, even a piece of it, to fall into the wrong hands. And so they designed a anti-missile missile to go into space and blow this satellite up. Just last week, we're testing this new HTV2, or HVT2, this high-velocity transport craft that supposedly flies at 13,000 miles an hour. It's on its second test. It launches, it gets up to speed, and they lose it. They lost it. They couldn't communicate with it anymore. Now, Kevin and I believe they just kind of switched it to Channel 2, and they don't tell us the results they got from there. But the fact that these high-tech weapon systems are going up, and they're being knocked out about as fast as we're putting them up, means somebody else is either defending themselves or being offensive in space. And there may be a whole lot more going on over our heads than we know about.
Okay, let's get to Francois's first question. And, Francois, I wish we had more time to get to your other two questions, but we really don't. But the iridium, does it have defense purposes?
It did when it first launched. Now, I happen to know personally the owner of the iridium satellite. And he bought this satellite out of bankruptcy. And he is using it for low-cost broadband cell phone. So he's making money off this satellite. But when it was launched, it definitely had military capabilities.
All right. Francois, like I said, I hate to do it. We have to move along because we've got to make room for other folks to call, too. But I want to thank you for the call. Both excellent questions.
Thank you.
All right. 623-444-5889 is the number. If you have a question or if you have a comment for Dr. Brooks Agnew, you need to dial that number, and it'll transport you right here to the studio, and you'll get a chance to talk with him. Also, don't forget, if you're outside the USA or outside of Canada, you can either call that number or use our flash message option on the website. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Kathy from Las Vegas. Hi, Dr. Agnew.
Hello, Kathy.
Hello. How are you?
Good. I was wondering if perhaps when NASA made that statement that there was no atmosphere or very little atmosphere on Mars, that it could have been true at the time, but now that has changed, maybe they've done some geoengineering to make more atmosphere, leave some algae or whatever.
Possible.
That could be possible.
Yeah, it's
possible.
Possible.
But you make a good point that things don't stay the same. A lot of people don't know this, but we've had a satellite watching Saturn for a long, long time, about 19 years now. Cassini has noticed the atmospheric pressure of Saturn come up almost 30% in 19 years. So all the planets in the solar system are being affected.
That's great. Let's hope there's more places to vacation to. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. Yeah. Well, I don't think I want to take a vacation to Saturn, but, Mars. Yeah, I'd do Mars. Would you go to Mars, Dr. Agnew, if NASA calls you tomorrow and says, okay, look, you guys have been talking about all our secret stuff. The cat's out of the bag. Everybody knows we've got secret stuff. So we got one going to Mars tomorrow. It's going to do a round trip in 2 days, so you can go spend a couple of days on Mars and come back. Would you go?
My bags are already packed.
Yeah, mine too. Yeah, absolutely. I would go. There's not a doubt in my mind that I would enjoy a couple of days at our base on the South Pole of Mars there. Maybe we have one there. It looks like it. 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. And you can speak with Dr. Brooks Agnew. Dr. Agnew, CNN reported... yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, why is it that we've had more missions to Venus than we have any other planet in our solar system, including our own moon? And why are there communication satellites still orbiting around Mars?
Well, excellent questions. You know, in my book, Venus, Watch the Other Hand, I give the listings of all of the missions to Venus. And there have been more missions to Venus than there have been to Mars. And now, so if you put them on a scale, Venus is heavier. Now, when you put the news reporting about the missions on a scale, Mars is heavier. We get lots more news coverage and information about missions to Mars than we do missions to Venus. Around Mars right now, there are seven so-called old satellites. Mission's over. Seven of them still functioning. NASA still keeps tabs on them. What are they doing? And why did NASA put a communication satellite around Mars? To communicate with whom? That's pretty interesting.
Are they monitoring communications, or are they boosting communications from Mars back to Earth?
Well, we don't know. But who's on Mars that needs to communicate with Earth?
Well, that's a good question. As far as I know, we only have one satellite on Mars. Or one rover on Mars, and that's Opportunity. Spirit died sometime last year.
Yes, and we have one satellite. The U.S. has one functioning satellite, so we are told, although we know there are seven still up there, still communicating with NASA. But there's one that we hear about. It's the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. The MRO, it has the high-definition, high-rise camera package on it. So if we've got a rover and we've got a satellite, the satellite itself, the MRO, could handle communications boosts, but there is a communication satellite up there. Now, the way we know this is, folks, you've heard me talk about the plans that NASA had to fly an airplane on Mars. And you've heard me talk at great length about that and the fact that you can't do that if the atmosphere is as thin as they've been telling us it is. Well, this program was not hypothetical. They actually built this thing. And they were ready to go, but they had a budget cut. So when they got their budget guys together, they had to make a choice between flying that airplane and doing some other mission. The other mission was putting a communication satellite up there. And so it won, and the plane lost, and they never flew it on Mars. That's the official story, and I have no reason to doubt that. However, maybe they thought, well, you know, if we fly this airplane, people are going to figure out that the atmosphere is much, much thicker than what we said. Maybe that's why they canceled it. However, in telling us that they had to do this other project, and the other project was a communication satellite, they gave us some more news, didn't they?
Yes, they did. And what I don't understand, Kevin, is, again, these are subjects of great national pride. So why the obfuscation? Why the subterfuge? Why not just be straight with people of the world and say, we found atmosphere on Mars, and we're going to fly an airplane in it, and we're going to tell you what all those artificial-looking structures are that are up there? Why not do that?
Well, because a crooked stick can't stand straight. Straight is not in their soul. They were born lying to us, and when I say born, I mean from the very beginning, NASA's been telling us things that weren't true, and they've been doing some great work. I mean, look, I give credit where credit's due. NASA has done some phenomenal work, and they really ought to get credit where credit is due, but they've been lying to us since virtually the beginning about a number of things. And, you know, a crooked stick just doesn't have it in its soul to stand up straight. And I don't think they can.
Well, you might have a point there. There has always been a military aspect to NASA. All of the Earth pilots and most of the personnel to this day are military officers trained in super patriotic treatment of intellectual property. And take also into consideration that most of the money that goes to NASA, they get a few $100 million from the taxpayers, and we talk about NASA's budget in Congress, and we trim it here and add to it there, cut jobs back here and add jobs there. But the vast majority of money is off budget, off account, black budgets, and we're not talking about billions of dollars. We're talking about trillions of dollars that are spent on high-tech space projects that we know nothing about, because primarily they're either weapon systems or they're high-tech surveillance systems that give the military the ability to monitor phone calls, street conversations, transportation of various metals, any kind of energy signatures that go on the ground. The age of an American soldier facing another soldier in uniform is a relic. It will probably never happen again as long as we live or our kids live. Because if you want to put together an army of five guys, they're going to see it from space. You want to put together an army of 200 million men, you won't last till lunchtime.
Good point. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin. Dr. Brooks. Mike from Kentucky.
Mike, can you hang on till we get back from this break that's coming up?
Sure can.
All right. Because we are about 20 seconds away from a break here. And when we come back from this break, we'll continue with Dr. Brooks Agnew and with your calls. And I hope you will find it in your soul to call and take advantage of the opportunity to communicate about these things while we still can, because we may not be able to do so much longer. We'll be back right after this.
From Burnaby, British Columbia, Canada. When a topic in history or science or the paranormal is too outré or controversial for conventional media, where can we go for information? To the Kevin Smith Show, of course. I'm a big fan.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Dr. Brooks Agnew. And Dr. Agnew, we have a caller on hold. We have Mike from Kentucky. Mike, welcome, and what's on your mind?
Yeah, I've got a couple of 3 points I'd like to touch on here.
All right.
One, earlier on you were talking about Obama having his hit list, according to MSNBC.
That's correct.
And it seems with all the information being released now by NASA and these other scientists about what would happen to us if aliens found us and how we would probably be totally wiped out, isn't this NASA's version of the Obama hit list?
Well, no, because what MSNBC reported was that these are actual hits. These are assassinations.
Right, I heard it.
Yeah, okay, and they even talked about how they would do it. Induced heart attacks, strokes, introducing toxins into vaccinations, that would make car accidents, anything that would make it look accidental. So it's, there is evil afoot. And, it's very real and it's very physical. Now, what NASA's doing, if they are behind all of this look out for the boogeyman from space stuff, if that's NASA that's behind that, and I don't know that it is, but whoever's behind it, I think they're getting us ready. Either they're getting us ready for a false flag operation, or they really have been out there and ticked off E.T., and know that retribution is on its way here.
Right, right. And you know, the thing about what you were talking about, a way of doing their hits, those of us who have been around the study of the UFOs and the paranormal for 40 or 50 years know that they have used these things in the past to get rid of witnesses to a phenomena that would not be quiet.
Well, you're right. But now it has to do with, being accused by someone of maybe being affiliated with or friendly with terrorists. And that's merely on the accusation, and they can hit you.
Yeah, whatever happened to innocent until proven guilty?
Mike, that went up in smoke with the rest of the Constitution a few years before Mr. Obama became president.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Another point, we're talking about the Mars and the Moon and the atmosphere and things of this nature. And long before there was ever a Soviet satellite launched or an American satellite launched or a moon probe, George Adamski, who was an alleged contactee, claimed to have been taken on a flight to the moon, where he was down low enough on the surface that through a telescope he could actually see clouds on the horizon between the light and the dark. He also reported that there was water, and he also reported seeing small animals on the surface camping around. Now, Mr. Adamski died, and most people labeled him as a kook, but if he was such a kook, how did he happen to get buried in Arlington Cemetery, which is reserved for heroes?
Interesting, isn't it?
It is.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
He is.
Hmm.
And that information is readily available, and Gray Barker, in his book of Adamski, reported that right at the very back and showed his tombstone.
Well, that is a piece of history that I didn't know. Now I do, and I appreciate it.
Well, what I may do is I may scan this off out of that and send it to you.
Okay. I appreciate it.
Okay, and y'all keep up the good work. And one more question, Dr. Agnew, whatever happened to your going to the North Pole?
Well, that's a good question. We have finally, after all these years, located a couple of good benefactors who are working on getting their assets liquid enough to be able to place the deposit on the ship. Now, once the deposit's made on the ship, and we plan to make that deposit before Christmas, once that deposit's made on the ship, we will make a global announcement that the expedition, this scientific expedition above the Arctic Circle to discover whether the Earth is formed as a hollow sphere or not, is on. And I'm excited about it because I know, just from a sampling and from playing the film in various countries, that there are about 40 million enthusiasts who want to know the answer to that question. So they're going to be following us. I believe it's going to be a great discovery, one way or the other, for all the people of Earth. And I'm still excited about that that prospect. It's good science, no matter how you look at it. You can say it's not mainstream, but it really is.
All right, Mike, thanks for the call. Good questions. Yeah, it's mainstream science. I mean, to know everything you can know about the planet you live on, that's mainstream. And however, some of the establishment, and this is a point that I make every opportunity I get. The establishment academia, establishment science, a lot of that is truly not mainstream. It's aberrant, but they're forcing it down everybody's throat.
Well, yes, it's aberrant, and in many cases it's opinionated, and in many more cases, data which refutes that position has been suppressed.
That's
true.
And
that is a travesty. That's not good science.
That's true. You know, one of the things that happened, speaking about science, what's good science and bad science, one of the things that happened with the 911 Commission, when they examined scientifically what happened, they have admitted that they did not even consider the melting steel. Well, that's bad science, because that the steel did melt, and that's a huge factor in determining, okay, what could cause that. Bad science. But, hey, it got paid for by the government. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kevin. Good evening, Dr. Agnew. This is Louie from Connecticut.
Hello, Louie.
Louie?
Yes, talking about the ex-players that may hit next week?
Yes, actually, Sunspot 1271, which is just about to face Earth, has been crackling with X-class flares all day long. And all it's going to take is a moment of instability, and that thing's going to shoot like a shotgun straight toward Earth.
Well, here's something a lot of people don't realize. The grid lines, like your local substation, they have circuit breakers, okay? And usually to a local phone company, they call it drainage coil. Any high surge of current, it will blow in a central office, okay? A lot of time in certain areas, you lose power. It's the circuit breaker to the substation, and that's a safety factor so the transformer doesn't get blown out. Usually on a cell tower, if it goes on copper, it's a safety factor to go through the central office. It will blow a fuse. So that will actually keep the equipment from blowing out. A lot of people don't realize that. Cell towers, transmission lines, they all have a parent in the central office to blow a fuse. Well, they don't call it a fuse, but I'm just saying that to make it easier.
Yeah, but Louie, what is commonly known in the power distribution business is that the voltage that is set up for these safety devices is pretty constant. It's about plus or minus 10% of the voltage exactly on the line. You're exactly right. They are high current sensing devices. But we're not talking about current. We're talking about wattage. We're talking about millions and millions of volts poured onto the line that are well above the voltage rating of these safety devices. That voltage will jump across that gap just as easily as it jumped from the sun to the earth.
Oh, yeah. I don't think for stone flares, yeah, that's too much voltage and current, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, but what will happen is it all depends which area, okay, the control center will see, and they will automatically switch, you know, to an area that didn't get all the full sunspots.
That's true. But if we have a solar wind that strikes the entire daylight side of a planet, you're talking about taking up the entire grid at one time.
Well,
there's no place
like
to
that,
run.
Yeah, in a case like that, you get a cannon of strength.
That's right. There's no place to run. All that voltage has got to be absorbed.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's all I have to say tonight.
All right, Louis. Thanks for the call. All right, 623-444-5889, a great opportunity for you to talk with Dr. Brooks Agnew. If you have a question, if you have a comment, that's the number to call, 623-444-5889. Just remember, folks, if this bill passes that I was telling you about, S-968, the way it works here, for those who are not in the United States, the way it works here is that either we have two houses in our government. One of those houses is called the House of Representatives. We shorten that and call it Congress sometimes, although that's improper. And then we have the Senate. Either house of the government can propose a bill. And say the Senate proposes one and they vote on it in the Senate. It passes. Now it has to go over to the House of Representatives and they produce a version, their version of the same thing and vote on it. It's not a carbon copy. It's close. They vote on it. If it passes, then the House of Representatives and the Senate put some people together to negotiate with each other to come up with a compromise between the two versions. And then once they come up with a compromise, both houses vote on it again. If it passes, then it goes to the president. And if it goes to the president, this one, I am absolutely certain he will sign it. I mean, I don't read his mail. But the track record tells me that he would sign it. And if that happens, and they decide, well, you know what? Somebody accused Kevin Smith, or somebody accused Brooks Agnew, of hanging out with terrorists. Let's make sure their sites get shut down. So the Department of Justice tells Google and Yahoo and Bing and everybody else, you gotta quit showing that site on your list. And then they can get in touch with my internet service provider and make sure they put me off. Offline. Time's running out. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are on final approach now, and that means, of course, that we only have a few minutes left in tonight's show. My guest this evening is Dr. Brooks Agnew. We do have time for one or two calls here if you hurry. And, folks, you're sitting there thinking, well, you know, I wish I could make this comment. I wish I could make that call. When I ask that question, but I am afraid. Go ahead and be afraid. Be very, very afraid until you lose the right to speak. Is that what you vote for? 623-444-5889. Brooks, on this, this HTV2, I, you know, when I was on your show, and then I've said it here on this show, when I think about the fact that the SR-71 top speed is still classified, and here they went on out on Twitter and announced the what they said was the top speed of the HTV-2, I have to assume that's not it. I have to assume that's just not the top speed.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. I think the top speed is way above that. I got a couple of emails from different people who said, well, the top speed of the SR-71 is published. And they gave me links. And when I went and looked, one of the links was in Wikipedia, and it says it would fly in excess of, and it gave a speed. Well, that's not the top speed. It'll fly in excess of this speed. We know this speed, and it'll go faster than that. Another one said that it was rumored to have flown at Mach 5. Well, okay, the rumor is published then. But the actual top speed of the SR-71 has never been published. It is classified.
You know, the original name of the SR-71 was not the Blackbird. It was the SR-71 Missile Interceptor.
I didn't know that.
Missiles travel at between 5 and 6,000 miles an hour.
So this thing was designed to go up and get right behind a missile and shoot it down. Is that it?
That's what it was designed to do. It has a corrugated titanium skin, and it said that the fuel cells actually leak fuel at ground level, at sea level. But once it gets up to atmosphere, once it gets up to altitude, the fuel tanks will seal themselves. So what these planes normally do is they take off on a very little fuel, get up to altitude, then they refuel, and then they go up from there. So the SR-71 flies between 80 and 100,000 feet altitude and can travel between, I would say, 5,000 and 7,000 miles an hour. That's like Mach 10.
Yeah, it is. It is. Well, the fact that it's classified and the fact that they still won't tell anybody what its top speed was, and this thing is retired. It's been retired now since, what, 1989? I think
they're still housed at March Air Force Base in the upper desert of California.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's officially retired. And, since, well over 10 years it's been retired. And its top speed is classified. So here's a piece of technology that we're going to test. And, hey, we're going to tell the whole world on Twitter that we're testing it. And while we're at it, let's just go ahead and tell them the top speed. Nonsense. Nonsense.
If you remember the rest of that article, it said that this was a launch vehicle that could be kept at high altitude, and that this craft could robotically be deployed to any point on Earth within 2 hours. That's what the article said.
Yeah, but if it's flying, I did a little calculation on this. If it's flying at Mach 20, 13,000. It can. The Earth is roughly 26,000 miles, right, around it.
Yeah, so, if at that altitude, it is. Yes.
Okay. Well, 26,000 miles to completely go around the Earth, meaning at 13,000 miles per hour, it can reach the most distant spot from wherever it is in 1 hour.
Correct.
Now, if, because 13,000 is half of 26, so the most distant spot from where it happens to be will be right straight through the Earth on the other side. Okay, so it can get around there. At the maximum, it would take it an hour to get there. However, if it actually can fly faster than 13,000, and I would bet money on it. It can fly faster than Mach 20, a lot faster than Mach 20. They didn't tell us the top speed. They told us a top speed that they were going to let us see. They let us see it, and then the telemetry shut down, and they said, oh, well, we lost it. And I don't buy that. I don't think they lost it. but I think it can go a lot faster than 13,000, and I bet you it can be at anybody's front door in 30 minutes.
Well, to put that in perspective, if people really don't know how fast that is, the International Space Station goes completely around the Earth once every 2 hours.
So this thing's fast. And actually,
orbit.
It may be able to fly fast enough that it could go into orbit itself, the HTV-2. If it does what I suspect, I think it could get to orbit on its own.
Yeah, if it had the surfaces and the propulsion to get up to that altitude, it could go into orbit.
Well, actually, it's when it comes back from orbit that it would need the surfaces, right?
Right.
Yeah, coming back would be the problem because it'll heat up on the way back. Getting out there, I don't think would be a problem.
Well, they say that it has a special skin on it, and it's able to fly at a temperature almost 1,000 degrees hotter than the melt temperature of steel.
Well, then it probably has what it needs to come back from orbit. It probably can survive re-entry.
Yeah, you know, probably good. Now, right now, they're saying this is an unmanned craft.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, I couldn't fathom a manned craft that takes a state and a half to turn around or turn left in. But that being said, they say that this craft may have what they call unified field technology, which means if you're on the inside of this craft, you want to make a left-hand turn at 13,000 miles an hour, you could do so while sipping on a cup of tea.
Do you think that this craft actually would have something like that?
I can only imagine. I mean, I have spoken to people who will say things like that, and then my very next question, probing one shingle deeper into their comment, they turn around and say, I can't tell you that. That's classified.
Yeah, yeah. Dr. Agnew, I want to thank you for being with us this evening because I know it's you've taken some time out of an extremely busy schedule, but as always, it's been fascinating, and I appreciate you being here. If you will, stay on the line with me for just a moment. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that's it. That's a wrap for this evening. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.